Food prices have increased over 40%. Energy prices have increased over 20%. Wheat and gas prices have increased over 70%. What's going to be next? Do you see these trends reversing or even stabilizing? All fiat currencies have always failed and collapsed their economies on their way down. The Roman Empire, China, France, Argentina, Finland, Mexico, Russia, and Zimbabwe all tried fiat currency and all collapsed into chaos. Meanwhile, the dollar has lost over 97% of its gold value since 1971, when an ounce of gold was valued at $35. If your assets are in paper, you are in danger. Protect your assets with gold and silver. Visit Discount Gold and Silver Trading at DGScoins.com. That's DGScoins.com or call 1-800-375-4188. That's 800-375-4188. Protect yourself and your family.
Good afternoon, ladies and gentlemen. I'm Melody Cederstrom, and you're listening to Financial Survival. I'm here with my co-host, Alfred Addisk, to bring you our opinion and commentary on today's economic and political events for Tuesday, August 4th, 2015. Good afternoon, Al.
Hello, Melody.
Well, gold today was up currently 180 in the New York aftermarket spot price. 1,088.90. We had a high of 1,095. Couldn't hold it. We had a reversal in the U.S. dollar, as temporary as that might be. You have silver up 9 cents today at 1468. You have, let's see here, platinum down 6 at 958. You have palladium up 2 at $603. The USDX today is up 0.44 at 97.92, so it did have a big reversal today. Crude oil is up a little bit, 0.65, 45.82, and the paper markets today, a little bit of pressure, down 47 points, 17,550. The NASDAQ was down 9 at 51.05, along with the S&P down 4 at 2,093. 10-year yield, 2.21%. The euro is down big today, 0.62 at 109. European markets basically flat overnight. Germany was up just a tad. That's it for the market report for August 4th, 2015.
It's okay with me, Melody.
So
what's next?
Well, we were busy today. We did a lot of shipping out today. Silver Eagles are beginning to flow. There's only a one-week delay now on Silver Eagles. So once they started being produced by the U.S. Mint and being shipped out, it just took a little bit of time until suppliers and ourselves were able to get caught up on our shipping to get everybody out. So I believe there's been pretty much massive shipping today of Silver Eagles. They've just now been coming through. But they are available. Premium's a little high. Premium's on 90% silver is still over Silver Eagles. Your best buy right now are the Silver Eagles. And, of course, we have some Canadian Maple Leafs are also a good buy. Morgan Silver Dollars, their premiums skyrocketed even with this pressure on silver of, middle of, from the 1st of July to the end of July. For the month of July, we have Morgan Silver Dollars pre-19 pre-1921, they're running at a little over $27. So, and again, we're looking at coins of rare and unusual value. We're looking at coins, supply and demand makes a difference in the price. And we had the same thing that for the gold coins, for the older coins, for the pre-33 coins, and we're still carrying the special for the $20 Liberty Gold piece, AU condition, beautiful coins, with a free silver coin, Silver Eagle, for $1,300. So there, Al. 800-375-4188. That's 1-800-375-4188.
An interesting article here that doesn't have anything to do with the world of finance or even politics. It's just meteorology, weather. And this is from Arutz Shiva, which is Channel 7 in Israel, TV station. And the headline is Apocalyptic Iran Heat Wave Nearly Breaks World Record. Iranians experiencing some of the hottest temperatures ever endured by humankind as heat index reaches 164 degrees. Now, we're talking about the heat index. We're not talking about the actual temperature, right? Heat index combines air temperature and humidity. But nevertheless, you know, you'll see the heat index, the cold index, or as it's here in the United States, we're used to the concept. If the humidity's relatively high, at the same time the temperature's high, it's going to feel hotter than it really is. How hot does it really feel? But they say on the same weekend in which it's threatened to annihilate Israel following the nuclear deal it struck with global powers, they mean mainly the United States, Iran experienced a mind-boggling 163 degrees heat index reading last Friday in what some see as a warning that the Almighty Himself, by the Almighty Himself, that all options are on the table. Well, they go on and explain it to some degree. Temperatures actually hit 109 degrees on Thursday. Dew point was 90 degrees. It got hotter on Friday, 115 degrees, dew point 89.6 degrees, yielding an inhuman 164 degrees on the heat index. Pretty amazing that Baghdad hit four consecutive days of over 120 degrees temperature. And it's been over 100 degrees every day since all the way back to May 30th. So they've had 2 months of it being over 100 degrees. And I've seen it down here in Texas where we had probably 3 months where virtually every day, it's been 5 or 10 years now, but every day was over 100 degrees, but pushing up over 120 and having a heat index of 164 degrees.
I lived in Arizona for many years, and certainly 120 degrees, 115 for any extended period of time in the summertime really isn't rare. But I guess it is if you.
But it's not the heat, it's the humidity. And how much humidity?
Oh, yeah, it's dry heat. Hot is hot.
Iran is enjoying high humidity as well as high heat. And I just sit back and think, oh, my gosh, you know, that is a lot of heat to deal with. They've had a four-day holiday so people could take shelter at home and stay out of the sizzling sun. Nobody's working for 4 days, or virtually no one's working for 4 days. It's just interesting to me. That's a lot of heat. So, got another one here from New York Times. Trans-Pacific Partnership session ends with heels dug in. Final negotiations, what they outline in this article is that they're trying to get 11 or 12 nations to work together and to agree to open up their trade with other nations. And as it turns out, in the midst of what may be a global depression, nations are not particularly eager to open up to competition from outside countries, from foreign countries. If everything was going hot and the Baltic Dry Index was running high and we had lots of trade and lots of, it may be that people would have been more interested or more willing to agree to the Trans-Pacific Partnership. But in these circumstances, they're trying to hold on. Some of them are just setting their heels and they're just saying, look, we're not giving up a nickel. It says here, final negotiations over the trade deal, Trans-Pacific Partnership, are not like checkers games with Congress pitting two branches of government and two parties against each other. Rather, all 12 nations are asserting their particular economic and political interests in a multiple-dimension chess match with one problem often setting off another. And I can see this really is a difficult thing. In this international environment, trying to get a dozen nations to agree to a broad set of rules to govern trade among the 12 nations, that's not easily done. It says to get one set of rules across 40% of the world gross domestic product, 33% of world trade, 12 disparate countries, from Brunei all the way through the United States was never going to be easy. Nevertheless, it's still central to President Obama's policy in Asia and Asia Pacific. It is the centerpiece of his economic legacy. I don't know. Obama has an economic legacy, Melody. See, he's done so much good for the country that he will have a legacy.
Well, he's certainly looking to acquire one with the.
Yeah, I mean, but he's going to have a legacy, all right. Going to be right up there with Jimmy Carter, and he's already I think he's already exceeded Jimmy Carter.
He's exceeded everyone.
Yeah, I know. The biggest problem may be intractable differences over intellectual property protections, especially for pharmaceutical companies developing the next generation of medicines known as biologics. A copy of the still incomplete intellectual property chapter viewed by the New York Times shows just how isolated the United States position is. In one section, the United States and Japan want language saying a lack of enforcement resources is no excuse for failure to ensure compliance. Now, that position is opposed by New Zealand, Vietnam, Mexico, Peru, Australia, Malaysia, and Brunei. All right? The United States wants strict enforcement of pharmaceutical entities' abilities to be the exclusive source of some of the drugs they're selling. And these other countries are saying they want to be able to copy those drugs. Much of the intellectual property dispute revolves around the protection of major pharmaceutical companies, said that, which want the United States 12 years of data protection on new drugs expanded to the other 11 Trans-Pacific Partnership companies. The Republicans in Congress, especially Senator Orrin G. Hatch of Utah, their key ally of the president on trade, demand that the White House hold firm. Most of the other countries and most international health groups oppose that position strenuously. They say it would keep drug prices high, which is true, drain government coffers, it's true if governments are buying the drugs, and put new biologic medicines out of reach of the developing world. And so, according to this article, that's the toughest nut to crack in order to reach an agreement. Do you think they're going to get an agreement, Melody, for the Trans-Pacific Partnership?
They're going to get something. Something's going to go through. They've been working on it for too long, and it's still too secret to really know, you know, what are the real details, and you want to wonder why, you know, this amount of information, you know, was released. You know, so it's just, you know.
Well, you have another never-ending story. I don't know if you're familiar with that movie or not. It's got some big old giant dog, and it's a fantasy film, and more or less for kids, I guess. I haven't seen it. I've just seen commercials. But the never-ending story, and this is one of them, this Trans-Pacific Partnership session ends with heels dug in. Canada is holding the ground. It's not giving up an inch on its dairy products. They want Canada to give up on dairy products. Canada's, we're not going along with that. So trying to align all of these interests at the same time, very, very difficult. And we can only guess what is going to have to be given up, perhaps by the United States, in order to persuade everybody to sign up to join this group.
Well, perhaps if there was some sort of an economic crack in the world's finances, maybe they would all come a-running and change their minds very quickly and saying, well, you know what, maybe we better go through with this deal because our future is not looking very well and we need the U.S. because...
Yeah, maybe they do and maybe they don't.
Maybe they need to, show and if we have some sort of revision to our economies here this fall, maybe that'll be enough to persuade some of these countries to go along with. And it's like, well, what kind of clout does, these smaller countries have? I mean, it's not like I'm debating for the passage of this, but to me, it's what kind of clout does Peru and Vietnam and Malaysia? Yeah, they make a lot of clothes and so forth. Those are big trade. I mean, hey, look at your clothing tags the next time you buy something new. And, but compared to, if you add the United States and Japan together,
this is an attempt to set up a trading bloc that is perhaps preliminary to something like NATO, in my opinion. The idea behind this is they're trying to create some sort of a line of defense against China. I'm not going to say that's the only idea, but I believe that's a significant motivation for this whole idea. We're going to get our gang of 12 nations together, and we're going to have them economically involved, and later we may be able to move into where they're more politically involved, or at least acting in concert when it comes to defending against China's economic growth. Trying to get everybody aligned up with that. China's economic growth and the threat that some of the Asian countries are going to feel because of China. They don't trust China. And I don't know whether that distrust is rational or not rational, but you can bet that they're wary. Got this enormous population which is now world's second largest economy. They are potentially scary to these other countries. So, but the thing I'm looking at and what I'm considering is it said that this is the cornerstone of President Obama's economic legacy. And in order to establish his legacy, we have to wonder how much is he willing to give up to make this deal work? I mean, how many states do we have to surrender to foreign countries as a condition of making this deal work so Obama gets his legacy? And I'm exaggerating, of course, but I'm wondering, who's prepared to give up the most here, and are they prepared to make the Trans-Pacific Partnership happen in the sense that it's an economic entity that might be good for everybody, or are they interested in making it happen because it'll be good for Obama's legacy? We aren't going to know for a while, but we'll watch and see. Let's take a break for some commercial announcements. Melody and I will be back on Financial Survival in just a moment. Please stay tuned.
If you have a heart condition and emergency rooms and medical doctors are not an option, you need our emergency heart attack kit. 5 concentrated liquid formulas enter the system in 60 seconds to protect your heart muscle, strengthen heartbeat, increase circulation, relieve pain, and make breathing easier. When seconds count, you want all the help you can get with our emergency heart attack kit. Easy to use and portable in a 1-pound compact kit for your purse, briefcase, or car. Call Apothecary Herbs now for your emergency heart attack kit toll free, 866-229-3663. That's 866-229-3663. International callers dial 704-875-8010 or order online at the3w's.thepowerherbs.com.
Since the beginning of the United States, kings have sought it, nations have fought for it. It has been traded, borrowed, purchased, and stolen. There is a reason for it: to secure the blessings of liberty to ourselves and our posterity. Invest with the security of gold and silver. Call Discount Gold and Silver Trading at 1-800-375-4188. That's 1-800-375-4188. Listen to Financial Survival with your host, Melody Cederstrom, on American Voice Radio Network and Shortwave Radio. Visit DiscountGoldAndSilverTrading.net or call 1-800-375-4188. That's 1-800-375-4188. For the very best in gold and silver trading, call toll-free 1-800-375-4188. That's 1-800-375-4188. Call now.
Are you concerned about prescription drug dependency to stay healthy? Are you worried that the cost and availability of your medications may put your health at risk? Perhaps it's time you consider a natural, safe, and effective way to deal with your health problems. If only you knew where to start. Start right here. Tune in to Herb Talk Live with herbalist Wendy Wilson every Tuesday and Thursday evening, 7 p.m. on AmericanVoiceRadio.com, where your healthcare options just became endless.
Folks, I'm Alfred Adisker with Melody Cederstrom on Financial Survival. Programs brought to you by Discount Gold and Silver at 1-800-375-4188. What's next, Melody?
This will get your blood boiling. Got mine going, so it'll get your going. Huntington Park, California.
Yeah.
Appoints undocumented, you might have seen the article, immigrants to city commissions. They're making history. Councilman Johnny Pineda announced yesterday, or last night, the city council meeting, the appointment of 2 undocumented immigrants as commissioners. Some critics say Pineda, who joined the council in March, specifically picked Medina and Sateran because they worked on his campaign. Others says they don't believe undocumented immigrants should serve the government in any way.
Undocumented immigrants are criminals.
Yes.
All right, this is like finding someone in your bedroom who doesn't live in your house. All right, this is a criminal, and they're saying, well, we're going to appoint these people to sit on the city council. I'm going to tell you, again, I've said this before, it's like with the sanctuary cities. You want to give sanctuaries to illegal aliens? Fine. Give it to them. But if anyone is hurt, injured, robbed, whatever, by an illegal alien, those of you who provide the sanctuary are the ones who are going to have to pay the bill. Sue them. Hold them liable. Hold them accountable.
Absolutely. I mean, this is amazing. He says, we need to make sure we bring everyone together to the table here in Huntington Park so we can make sure we're sharing the same vision. The mayor threw her support behind the appointments. Now get this, the appointments won't be official until processed by the council and they pass a life scan background check. Really? They have to pass a life scan background check? It isn't to the fact that they're illegal?
Yeah, I know.
Hey, I mean, really? Unbelievable.
I understand, and it's just another evidence of the kinds of, well,
what
you know,
is wrong
if
with people?
Stand together, it loses its cohesiveness, and this is part of the result of not just allowing illegal aliens to flow into this country, but it's also a result of things like, let's set up government that responds for English, dial one, for Spanish, dial two. The people that immigrate into this country should be effectively compelled to speak English. I don't mean that you can put a gun to their head, but just look, we're not going to bend over backwards to accommodate. You want to come here? You learn to speak our language. We don't learn to speak yours. We can if we want to, but it's a voluntary deal. All right? If you're going to come here, learn to speak English. If you want to be assimilated into the culture, learn to speak English. If you want to maintain your own language and just move a little Mexico from down there in Tijuana and moving on up into wherever in California, Arizona, Chicago, whatever, that's not going to work. We don't want that. We don't need it, and it's dangerous to tolerate it. This goes to this whole idea of multiculturalism. You know, we've talked about it before, but we are taught that we have to learn to respect everyone's culture. And we need to treat their cultures equally. That's crazy. Some of these people, their culture, again, cannot produce much more than a wooden wheel for their ox carts and will generate a life expectancy of 45 or 50 years on their own. Do you want to respect that culture? Teach your children. Oh, respect this culture. Of course, you might only live to be 45, but respect this culture. Or should you respect the culture that will let you live to be 70, 75, 80, whatever? You know, these cultures are not all created equal, and it's not just a matter of dancing around and some people dance around this colorful outfit, some people dance around in this colorful outfit. There's far more to culture and the system of values than the color of the costumes you wear when you do your folk dances. And you have to recognize it. And it's not racism, it's not, why are people coming here? People want to come here and retain their culture, they are being self-destructive. The reason they're coming here is because their culture doesn't work. And they think they have this stupid idea that they can come up here and maintain their culture and still have whatever it is that this country was once able to produce. And it's not true. If you're going to bring your culture with you, you're going to bring a system of values that's going to keep you at the same economic level, the same level of violence, education. You bring it right along with you. It's like a disease. If you're coming to this country, you should welcome the idea of abandoning the culture that you've grown up in. You should welcome the idea that, look, we can get hold of culture where we can actually prosper. And instead, we have people that are trying to maintain their culture, and at least in some instances, and our government cooperates with them. Oh, yeah, let's respect their culture. No, let's not. Let's call a spade a spade. Let's say, look, your culture stinks. It sucks. It's fine if you don't mind dying at age 45. It's fine if you don't mind living in poverty all your life, all right, and spending your afternoons sleeping in a hammock. All right, if that's what you want to do, do it. Don't come up here and say, I want to maintain my culture, but I also want a nice house, I want a nice car, I want to have all the things that the United States was at least once able to provide. I want all that, but I want to do it with my culture. It isn't going to happen. If you could do it with your culture, you wouldn't have to have left your home country in the first place. So,
what's amazing now?
You gotta respect. You know, when we talk about learning to respect other people's cultures, first thing you need to do is learn to respect your own and understand that my life depends on my culture. just as yours does and everyone else in this audience. Your lives, your prosperity, your future, your children's lives, your children's future prosperity, it depends on your culture. And if you're prepared to sacrifice that culture so you don't hurt the feelings of somebody else who's riding around in an ox cart, you're stupid. You've got to do what you can to preserve that system of values that makes it possible for people to enjoy long life and prosperity. And insofar as we abandon that culture, and we do it, not just because there are foreign forces coming into this country. We do it because we have people in Congress, in the Senate, in the White House, and they're trying to teach us new values. And the idea, let's move our jobs over to foreign countries. We won't need the jobs or the industries anymore. Let's let illegal aliens pour into the country. It won't matter. It'll be great for the economy. And we sit there like a bunch of dumbbells and say, well, if you say so, the government says so. You folks need to begin to understand your own culture. It's been polluted, perverted, diminished. And we're in jeopardy. I mean, we're in a lot of trouble. And it's because of these cultural losses. It's not because simply because we lost the jobs. That's a reflection of a change in culture where people don't respect the American, the United States of America. They don't think we've got something unique, something valuable. And they've been willing to sacrifice it. And the result is we're getting closer to poverty all the time. Standard of living is not going up. Wages aren't rising. Jobs are disappearing. Illegal aliens are pouring in. Why? Because as a nation, we don't have enough respect for our own culture. If we had any respect for our own culture, wouldn't we protect our borders? I mean, we've got enough. We can go and deal with ISIS. We can fight with them. They're invading foreign countries, and they're doing it with guns and arms and whatever and violence. We can fight with them. But we have illegal aliens pouring into this country, and they don't even need any guns. And we just sit there and say, oh, golly, what can we do? What we can do is begin to generate a measure of self-respect. And that means you have to learn to respect your own culture. You need to learn to protect it. Unless you see clear examples where the culture is wrong, all right, then you make adjustments to your system of values, yada, yada. But as long as we won't respect our own culture, hey, we're going to lose it. And when we do, what's going to replace it? You folks are going to be living like Mexicans before this is all over. And when it happens and your children say, how did it happen, Mommy? How did it happen, Grandpa? You can just tell them, well, we were watching TV and we believed in multiculturalism. You know, we thought it was important to respect other people's cultures. So we didn't bother respecting our own. And now you kids are going to live in poverty. You're going to be peons. So, you want to save this country, start fighting for its culture. Start to recognize what the culture is. Start to celebrate it. Start to enforce it. Make clear to your congressmen and your senators, we want to retain our culture. And we're not going to give it up in order to accommodate people from some other country. If they want to come here, make them learn English. If they have to learn English, you know, they're not going to be able to set up little colonies within the United States to represent their home country. Make them speak English. They will be more likely to be assimilated. It's not a guaranteed deal, but it's more likely to happen than if you don't. So, what's next, Melody?
What always amazes me, I mean, it's not just watching the TVs, that's part of it, but that's the conditioning from TVs. You know, they make people feel that if you speak out, if you say you want to respect, oh, no, all of a sudden you're tagged with all these names and so forth, and people have been conditioned to be silent.
Yeah, they're afraid to stand up and speak out. People and the one we won't, oh my God, don't say anything or you'll be called a racist. You be racist.
It just
you
know, doesn't my have problem. Anything to do with it. What?
Well, I know, but it does. It becomes that's a label. It's like sticks
yes.
and stones can break my bones, but names can never hurt me, except for the name racist. That could hurt me. You criticize another nation's culture. You criticize another group of people. Oh, that's racist. look, is it right or is it wrong? Is it true or is it false? You know what racism is? Racism is a lie. Every single time, racism is a lie. For example, if I said all whites are smart, that's a lie. That's racism. There's a lot of dummies running around that are white. If I said all blacks are dumb, that's a lie. There are plenty of blacks that run around that are intelligent. Whenever you get into where you say all people of a particular group fit a particular profile, when you say all, you are speaking racially. That's racism. But if you sit back and say there's a percentage of a particular group that are doing this, that, or the other that's completely self-destructive or stupid, you can't easily say that in this country without being charged with being a racist, because if you criticize any member of a particular group, all of a sudden it becomes reason to say, oh my God, the guy is racist. He's criticizing other people's cultures, blah, blah, blah. You know, there are certain cultures in this society, subcultures, that really are just fabulously self-destructive. And nobody wants to talk about that. One good example are homosexuals. What's their life expectancy? You know, this is promoted. We have a society that says, oh, it's just a lifestyle choice. No, it's not. It's a death style choice. Government passed special rules that actuaries, insurance company actuaries, couldn't track homosexuals, the idea of being homosexual in relationship to diseases and death. And that came out of the 80s during the AIDS epidemic. But
well, I'm sure
it's changed some.
I'm sure it's changed.
I will guarantee you that the homosexual lifestyle will lead you to an earlier death than the heterosexual lifestyle. And we're teaching this to children, saying, oh, this is okay. You can be homosexual if you want.
You know what's interesting?
If you want to give up 5 or 10 years of your life, go ahead. Somebody, if they were responsible, should be teaching these children, that's a dumb idea. Stay away if you're smart. If you want to live, that's a dumb idea. But if you talk about it, oh my gosh, you're racist, you're homophobic, you're something else. Yeah, I guess I am homophobic. I don't want to die. You understand? I understand that homosexuality is a disease vector. I'm homophobic in the same sense that I am typhoid phobic. And I don't want typhoid Mary sleeping in the same room where I am. That's right. I don't want typhoid, so I'm going to stay away from typhoid Mary. Lock her up. Get her out of the population. She doesn't have a right to make everyone else sick. Homosexuals are one example of a kind of subculture that exists, and it's being celebrated as if it's something to brag about. Illegal aliens are another one. They're appointing them to some city council or whatever out in California. This is madness. This is really a kind of suicide, and it's evidence that we just have no appreciation for what it means to be an American. We have no appreciation for what our culture has at least done in the past. It's been so twisted and polluted lately that I'm not sure how much still stands, but it can be regained. Just got to do some reading and say, look, here's some values. These are values that we can emulate. We can grab onto these. We can hold on tight. And we can leave this country in better shape for our kids than it's been for the last 10, 15, 20 years. I'm Alfred Addis here with Melody Cederstrom on Financial Survival. Take another break. Be right back. Please stay tuned.
Job stress, financial obligations, or relationship problems have you feeling stressed out? When life is too much to handle, Use Apothecary Herb's Emotional Stress Formula. Feel calm and more in control with herbs especially combined to provide the organic nutrition your system needs to help you cope. Complete instructions for maximum benefit and a money-back guarantee. You've waited long enough. Call Apothecary Herbs now. Toll free, 866-229-3663. That's 866-229-3663. International callers dial 704-875-8010 or order online at thepowerherbs.com.
Food prices have increased over 40%. Energy prices have increased over 20%. Wheat and gas prices have increased over 70%. What's going to be next? Do you see these trends reversing or even stabilizing? All fiat currencies have always failed and collapsed their economies on their way down. The Roman Empire, China, France, Argentina, Finland, Mexico, Russia, Zimbabwe all tried fiat currency and all collapsed into chaos. Meanwhile, the dollar has lost over 97% of its gold value since 1971, when an ounce of gold was valued at $35. If your assets are in paper, you are in danger. Protect your assets with gold and silver. Visit Discount Gold and Silver Trading at DGScoins.com. That's DGScoins.com or call 1-800-375-4188. That's 800-375-4188. Protect yourself and your family.
Hi, folks. I'm Alfred Addisk here with Melody Cederstrom on Financial Survival. What's next, Melody? Did you have something you wanted to add?
Nope. We're moving on.
All right. Here's one from Reuters. Former CEO of collapsed Mt. Gox Bitcoin exchange arrested in Japan. All right. Mark Karples, the former head of the defunct Bitcoin exchange Mt. Gox, was arrested on Saturday in connection with the disappearance of hundreds of millions of dollars worth of the virtual currency. Okay? The French-born Karples, 30 years old, is suspected of falsifying data on the outstanding balance of the exchange, at one point the world's largest hub for trading the digital currency. Police were unable to immediately confirm these reports. When it filed for bankruptcy in February of 2014, Mt. Gox said 750,000 customer bitcoins and another 100,000 belonging to the exchange were stolen due to a software security flaw. See, the hackers stole the bitcoins. That was the story. They lost funds represented... The lost funds represented the equivalent of $480 million at the time of the bankruptcy filing. Mt. Gox also said more than $27 million was now missing from its Japanese bank accounts. Karples, who had blamed hackers for the loss, later said he'd recovered 200,000 of the lost bitcoins. How do you recover 200,000 lost bitcoins? All right, they say they lost 850,000 altogether, but he got 200,000 back. How do you do that? I mean, if the hackers broke into your computer and they stole your bitcoins, what do you do to get those bitcoins back? The whole thing is just nonsense. And the implication is that this guy Karples, he stole the coins. All right? He's the one. Now, and the reason I bring this article to people's attention is, when Bitcoin started out, it was perceived to be safe. It was brilliant. We had computer programs that kept track of each coin, who had owned it, who it was sold to, and so on. There was a pedigree on each coin, and it couldn't be defeated because it was brilliant and blah, blah, blah. Nobody could manipulate the currency except those running the computers. And unfortunately, it was impossible to resist the temptation of manipulating digital currency. This guy Karpels, that's what's happened here. It's a virtual certainty. It's not an absolute. They don't say so in the article, but the lesson in all of this is that if you want to save your wealth in the form of a currency that can't be manipulated and made to disappear, you need to look for something non-digital, like gold and silver. It is improbable that any mortal man can long resist the temptation. Put him in a position where he's able to deal with a digital monetary system, all right, digital currency. How long before the guy says, well, look, what's it going to hurt if I just skim off $10,000 worth of digital currency? I've got hundreds of millions of it here. Who's going to notice? And it's all digital anyway. We can just spin it out of thin air. I mean, where's the harm if I take it? You know, because I make such incredible contributions. It's only fair that I take 10 grand for me. And then he's going to sit back and say, well, you know, now that I think about it, I guess I could take 20 grand. And the next time he's taking 50 grand, and before you know it, he's filing for bankruptcy, as this guy Karpels did at Mt. Gox, because they'd lost close to $500 million. I doubt that you're going to have a hard time. It's not impossible, but you're going to have a hard time finding anyone who can operate a digital currency system and not try to use that system for his own, and for increasing his own wealth. It's the kind of thing, it's so easy to steal digital currency that it becomes an almost irresistible temptation. And the lesson here is, if you can't trust Bitcoin, if you can't trust that, how can you trust the dollars in your bank account? They're just digital. No? What makes any of us think that we can trust our existing digital banking system with credit cards and debit cards and so on, and not too much cash? Why would anyone think we can trust that more than we can trust Bitcoin? And from my perspective, there's not good reason to believe we can. And there's more than a little evidence to indicate that we can't. We can't trust it. What has happened? How much inflation have you folks suffered in the last 40-some years? Enough to make your dollar worth less than a nickel compared to what it was back in 1971. That's digital currency in action. That's the inflation that allows people in positions of power to just skim a little off the top. Couple percent every year, and we'll skim a little off the top, and the people don't complain too much because they're only getting robbed, or maybe 2% a year. But after 40 years, you're down over 95%. This is what happens. If we had been saving our money in the form of gold all the time for the last 40 years, you would not be down 40%. Or excuse me, 95%. Your wealth would have been preserved. These digital coins, Bitcoin, brilliant idea, but you still got to trust somebody. You've got to trust the systems analyst, the programmer, the guy that runs the business. Somebody is in a position to steal that digital currency, and you've got to trust them. There's a verse in the Bible that says, trust no man. Warn, don't put your trust in people. All right, doesn't mean you have to be paranoid, but don't put your trust. Somebody says, well, here, let me hold your money for you. You can trust me. Probably not a good idea. If the Bible is true, that's probably not a good idea. You got to be wary. Let the buyer beware. Little of that. And part of the way you don't trust other people is you take your gold, your silver, whatever you have for wealth, and you keep it in your hand. Now, I don't mean that you walk around with it, holding it in your pocket all day and the rest of that sort of thing, but it's close at hand. Bitcoin is another one of these deals where you trust people, and on top of them, you trust your wealth to a digital form of currency. This is going to end badly every single time, not necessarily in the next 6 months, but inevitably. You want to trust in the digital currency? Well, good luck with that. but I don't believe it's going to work out well over a period of time. What's next, Melody?
And it's just always amazing. I was talking to a client earlier today, and we were talking about, you know, I've been doing this for a little over 20 years. Back then, you know, we had dealers that, you know, gold dealers and silver dealers. We all talked the same fundamentals, and we competed with price and education and so forth. It was a level playing field, but people received much of the same information about gold and silver, the fundamentals. Now, after 2008, you have everybody and their brother on the internet trying to sell gold and silver, and they create all kinds of stories, all kinds of theories, all kinds of pitches, all kinds. They've created novelties, they've created gimmicks, and there isn't anything that is common anymore to the fundamentals of gold and silver, and it's confusing people. And I hear this every day, people who come to me, well, I heard this, well, I heard that, and I do appreciate that because I can help people understand the truth other than just something that comes, you know, from left field out of somebody that you don't even know who's on the internet. And it just baffles me how people trust so much of what comes from the internet.
Well, it comes from anybody. It comes from your congressman. Comes from your senator.
But at least you know who they are. You're on the internet, you don't even know who they are, Al.
Oh, I agree with that. That's.
I mean, you have no idea who they are.
Yeah.
I just get amazed.
It's evidence of.
But my point that I was trying to make, and you're right. It's. You know, I'm not even sure what point I was trying to make. It just gets upsetting to me because people are just led so much astray. You know, Bitcoin,
It's a question of trust. Bible says trust no man. In other words, if somebody tells you that the price of gold is going to go up to $20,000 an ounce, well, maybe that's true. But you can't trust people that are going to tell you that. You have to do some sort of research to verify whatever it is. Whatever foundation this guy says, here's why I say the price of gold is going $20,000 an ounce. All right, maybe it is. I don't know. But if somebody says it, you can't just automatically believe it. You can't just trust in people to make these assertions. You have an obligation to dig into the facts yourself and do some research and come to your own conclusion and say, no. I don't think it'll go over 18,000.
But you don't but you don't do your research with other analysts. You have to read the news. You have to
stats. I get that. But this is a function of trust. That's how we are misled because we are inclined. There's something natural in the species where we are inclined to trust other people and often to our detriment. It is that trust that allows us to be deceived and sometimes exploited. And it's not a matter of being paranoid, but it is a matter of being personally responsible. We would rather trust than assume responsibility, liability for ourselves. I don't have to do any study. I'd trust in so-and-so. No, you do need to. You need to do some of your own homework.
I do all my reading, all my own research. People ask me all the time, well, who do you follow? I don't follow anyone. I do my own research. I've been doing this for a long time. Al, you've been doing this for a long time. And that's how we come to the conclusions that we come to. I don't read any analysts. I might read them just to read. But other than that, not for my opinions. I understand gold. I understand where we're headed. I understand the fiat currency. And I understand inflation. And so people get strayed from those simple fundamentals of gold and silver. We have a caller. I wanted to talk a little bit about Apple, but we have a caller, Ivan, calling us. Good afternoon, Ivan.
Yes, good afternoon, Melody. And how are you doing?
Good. What's up, Ivan?
I have one point I'd like to discuss. There is what we call a low-intensity war going on across the LOC between India and Pakistan, which there is nothing on MSM for the last, this is happening for the last few months, that there is a shooting and killing on both sides of the LOC where they, both India and also Indian, also Pakistani soldiers are dying. And I was wondering, since both of them are nuclear powers, this could probably be another spark which could ignite the expected Third World War. What are your thoughts about it?
Well, the problem is probably that here we still have our military relationship with Pakistan is something we have to be careful about. Our economic relationship with India is something we have to be careful about. We're right there in Afghanistan, across the border from Pakistan. It's a very ticklish situation. What are you going to do? I mean, the United States is caught here. If we get into this, we're going to have to choose sides. And which side do you suppose we're going to choose? The radical Islamists that are at least close to power in Pakistan, or shall we choose the Hindus who are just out to make a buck in the global economy? Which ones do you think we should choose, Yvonne?
Well, I mean, I don't think we'll have much choice after it happens, but they had two wars already between India and Pakistan.
Yeah, I know.
So should that explode, I mean... that's one thing, and I said, we are giving Pakistan a lot of money, you know, like we give everybody else, Egypt and Israel and everybody else. So we're just spreading the money which we don't have, and
But we're not. What are we buying with it? What are we buying with that money? Other than an opportunity to give them more money. I mean, some of the people we give money to are just snarling and snapping at us, and they don't respect us, and they don't like us, but as long as we're giving them money, they'll kind of keep quiet, but when the day comes, when the money supply runs out, they'll turn their backs on us in a heartbeat. And I would expect something like that out of Pakistan. And the other point, of course, is Pakistan and India used to be one nation. What we're really looking at is a kind of civil war between the Muslims in India and the Hindus, and that's where these people don't like each other. They're pretty serious about this, and it's not going to wipe out just by creating a new country for Pakistan. Say, okay, all the Muslims go up there and the Hindus stay down here. It's a difficult situation, but I'll tell you what, Yvonne, we are out of time. I want to thank you for your phone call. It's a good subject. We'll have to consider it another day. Melody and I will be back tomorrow. In the meantime, the good Lord bless you, me, Melody, Frank, the producer, and Yvonne for calling in on the program. Bye-bye.
I work all night. I work all day to pay the bills I have to pay. Never seems to be a single penny left for me.